Thank you, Carl. I'd like to recognize my co-authors for the contribution they made on this research. My outline will go as follows. I'll begin with my objectives, followed by the introduction, materials and methods, and then the results and discussion, and last will be the conclusions. The objectives for this study were to determine the effectiveness of alternative soil sampling methods for the nitrogen soil test for rice on clay soils, and in doing so, to enhance the ability to sample for site-specific nitrogen by either increasing the ease of use or the options of sampling instruments. In Arkansas, in this current year, 1.46 million acres of rice were planted, which constitutes nearly half of the domestic rice production in the United States. Nitrogen costs are often the largest single operating expense for these producers, with the standard recommendation being 168 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, adjusted based on soil texture, whether it was a silt loam or clay, with clays generally receiving more, hybrid versus pure line varieties or the cultivar, and then the previous crop, whether it was soybean or rice or another crop in the rotation. The nitrogen soil test for rice measures alkaline hydrolyzable nitrogen that enables a site-specific nitrogen recommendation that can be used in place of the standard recommendation. In 2012, NSTAR was released by the University of Arkansas for use on silt loam soils in rice. And then after the correlation and calibration process, it was released in 2013 for use on clay soils. Figure 1 shows us the difference when using the nitrogen recommendation from NSTAR when compared to the standard recommendation. And on the x-axis, we have soil texture and the frequency or the number of fields on the y-axis. For clay soils, we see that represented by the blue bar, we see that 23% of fields had an NSTAR value that increased from the standard recommendation at an average of 18 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, while the orange bar shows us that 72% of fields had an NSTAR recommendation that decreased from the standard recommendation at an average of 48 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And we see a similar trend with the silt loam soils. Now this shows us that NSTAR has the ability to greatly reduce the nitrogen recommendations while maintaining yields. And this not only directly affects the producer's pocketbook, but it also reduces the risk of environmental pollution through nitrogen loss mechanisms. During the development of NSTAR, they found a significant interaction between sample depth and soil texture, with the highest predictability being for silt loam soils being at a 45 centimeter depth, and then the highest predictability being at a 30 centimeter depth for clay soils. Figure 2 shows us the importance of why of taking that correct sample depth. This is taken from a study done by Roberts et al. In 2009. Along the x-axis, we have hydrolyzable nitrogen, while along the y-axis, we have depth. For site 16, we see that at a 10 centimeter depth, the hydrolyzable nitrogen concentration was 200 parts per million. Yet, and it decreased to less than 100 parts per million at a 30 centimeter depth. While on site 11, there was no change in hydrolyzable nitrogen. A sample taken on site 16, if it's too shallow or too deep, would give us an NSTAR recommendation that's either too low or too high. And so currently, the method used on clay soils is a modified bucket and drill. But the feedback we've gotten from this method is that farmers don't really like using it. It's messy, it's difficult to cart around, and they'd rather have an easier method. And a method that our farmers and producers are going to use is vital to the adoption of NSTAR across Arkansas. Some of our concerns with these alternative methods is that, one, how does it compare with the original method in the correlation and calibration process? And then, two, does it take that specific depth? We had 8 site locations where we compared our methods, and the probes used were a 15 centimeter Dutch auger, which was used in the correlation and calibration, a modified bucket and drill, which is the current method in use. Then our alternative methods were a clean hole spade probe, dry or normal, one that was dipped in water, and then one that was lubricated with WD-40. And the idea behind the WD-40 in the water was to reduce compression of the soil and thereby collect the correct depth. The statistical software used was Jump Pro 11, and we ran a simple ANOVA on the data. Our experiment was set up in a randomized complete block design, with each sample being, or each technique being sampled, or a sample being taken by each technique, excuse me, from each block. The outliers in our data, there were three outliers, and they were identified as sampling errors, and they were removed from the analysis. Figure 4 and Figure 5 show us some of the variability we saw across our site, as well as through depth. For both graphs, we have blocks on the x-axis with the N-star value along the y-axis. We can see for Site 2 that there was a large decrease in hydrolyzable nitrogen with depth, while on Site 4, there was no decrease in hydrolyzable nitrogen. And this is similar to the research we've seen that has been published. In addition, on Site 2, there was a large variability between our sampling blocks, with our sampling blocks being only 10 to 15 meters apart. And so this shows that there's a large or a high level of field variability in our sampling fields. After running ANOVA on the data, there were 3 out of the 8 sites that had statistical differences, and I will be focusing on those 3 sites. The first site, Site 1, had an outlier, and with the outlier there was no statistical difference, yet when the outlier was removed, there was a statistical difference at the 0.1 level. And this is shown on Figure 8. For the next 3 graphs, we will have the sampling techniques along the x-axis with our N-star value along the y-axis. Here, our bucket and drill, our KHS dry and our KHS with water, were not statistically different from our Dutch auger, while our KHS with water was statistically different. And notice also how each method was still numerically higher than our Dutch auger. On our second site, there was also an outlier, and with the outlier, there was no statistical difference. When it was removed, there was a statistical difference at the 0.1 level. Here, the KHS dry, the KHS with water, and the KHS with WD-40 were not statistically different from the Dutch auger, while the bucket and drill was statistically different. And yet again, we see that they're all numerically higher. Our last site had no outliers, and it was statistically different at the 0.05 level. And here, the bucket and drill, the KHS dry, and the KHS with water were not statistically different from the Dutch auger, while the KHS with WD-40 was statistically different. And again, we see that that all sampling methods were numerically higher than our Dutch auger. Now this suggests that our alternative methods are not taking the same sampling depth as our Dutch auger. And so this would give us a slightly higher N-star value, yet based on our method of application and the level of accuracy in that method of application, we decided that a difference of 12 parts per million would be an acceptable error in our values. And so to compare how our sampling methods do with accuracy and precision, we counted the number of sites where each technique was less than, where that technique was less than 12 parts per million from the Dutch auger mean. And then we counted the number of sites where that technique had a standard deviation of less than 12 parts per million. And this is summarized in Figure 11. Here we have our 2 conditions for accuracy and precision on the x-axis with our frequency along the y-axis. For all field conditions, we saw that the KHS dry, which is represented by this orange bar, was slightly more accurate and precise than our other methods. Yet when we separated our fields into dry and wet field conditions, our bucket and drill was more accurate than our other methods, while the level of precision was the same. Another tendency we saw in our data was that as the hydrolyzable nitrogen increased in the field, so did our variability. And this is shown in Figure 12. Here we have the N-star value along the x-axis with our standard deviation along the y-axis. And the standard deviation for each technique was graphed against the Dutch auger mean for that site. And so below 150 parts per million, our standard deviation was fairly constant or consistent, while once we got above 160 parts per million, the standard deviation varied greatly. And 160 parts per million corresponds to 115 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, which is about 57% of the standard recommendation. So we're at 160 parts per million NSTAR value. We're literally cutting our nitrogen recommendation in half. And as we continue to increase our NSTAR value, our nitrogen recommendation continues to decrease. And so it's very important we're precise at these high NSTAR value fields. So overall, the alternative sampling methods appeared to sample a shallower depth than shallower depth than the ditch auger. While below 150 parts per million, or the fields that were below 150 parts per million, they appeared to be accurate enough to take the sample. While the KHS dry was the most precise and accurate out of those sampling methods. And on the fields that were above 160 parts per million, we needed a method that was a little bit more accurate and had that level of precision, and the bucket and drill would be the best method for those sites. And additionally, the fields where there is high variability, where the NSTAR value is really high, highlights an area of additional research where we need to learn how to handle that variability, whether it's to lower it or to manage it. And I'd like to acknowledge those that helped on my study, and also the Arkansas Rice Promotion Board for funding this research. And I'd like to open for questions at this time.
We do have plenty of time for questions.
Yeah.
So why do you think, the people who are taking the samples think they're doing a pretty good job of getting out of the visuals to get them? So what do you think is happening with the
on the So the question was, what do we think is making the difference on the alternative methods that is getting that shallower sample depth?
Yeah.
And I think it goes, there's a couple of reasons. I think one is the compression factor that we were trying to mitigate with our water and our WD-40, or the compression, sorry. And it's just when we're taking that sample with a probe, over a push probe, it's pushing that soil down, and we're not getting that correct depth on the clay soil. And I think another reason is with those push probes, one of the things we notice is that as we're pulling it out, a lot of times that clay soil would stick together and the sample would actually start to slide out of the probe. And that was even seen worse with the water and the WD-40. Yeah?
I got a question. It seemed like the big variability came at the high end of the spectrum. Does that indicate that the error with how much of your top layer you're collecting versus how much of the bottom one? I mean, are you losing some of an enriched top layer in some of those methods?
So the question was the fields that showed a high variability in the sampling methods were the fields that had that high NSTAR value. And the question was, are we losing some of the nitrogen in that top layer, maybe due to erosion or other practices?
Or
is that your question?
Is your probe not efficiently?
Oh, is the probe not efficiently collecting the top sample?
Top layer.
And I'd say that, I mean, the probe is most likely taking that top layer because, I mean, it's difficult to, I mean, it's collecting this top layer for sure. And I think partially why the variability is so different on those high NSTAR value fields is it's due to like the management practices. I mean, what was cropped there and how it was managed, I think is just with those fields is just higher level of variability.
So did you happen to take a look at that? You're doing a drawing of
Oh, we did not look, well, I did not look at the chemical basis of WD-40. But from what my knowledge is it's mainly a lubricant. And so it's going to have more of an oil base. And I do not believe it has nitrogen or has effects on the NSTAR. And so to have an effect on the NSTAR value, it'd have to have ammonium in it. And I do not believe W40 has ammonium.